Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We've got another hour of crime for you this week in a Dick Powell double play. We're going to start off with Rogue's Gallery, an episode titled Little Drops of Rain from November 8th, 1945. Then after a quick Ripley's Believe It or Not, it's Richard Diamond, Private Detective, in the Edna Wolfe case from August 9th, 1950.
Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as Private Detective Richard Rogue. In Rogue's Gallery. Rogue speaking. Well, tonight you're going to meet some charming people. And you're going to run into a little bit of very fancy murder. The name of the story is Little Drops of Rain. But before we get into our story, here's Jim Doyle, the man from the Fitch Company.
Did you know that there are over 50 million men in the United States who shave? Yes, that's a lot of men. It was in the interest of these 50 million shavers that Fitch Company chemists and technicians went to work in their laboratories and came up with Fitch's No Brush, a shaving cream especially designed to give a solid comfort shave. You see, Fitch's No Brush shaving cream contains not one, but three important shaving ingredients that work together to give you a smoother, faster shave. It also contains a special skin conditioner ingredient. Men appreciate this ingredient because it has a soothing effect on the skin the instant it's applied, and it keeps the skin feeling smooth and refreshed long after the shave is finished. Men also like the just right consistency of Fitch's No Brush. It's neither too thick nor too thin. It's not greasy and won't clog the razor.
If you're among those who prefer a lather cream, try Fitch's Brush Cream. It gives a rich, dense lather that wilts whiskers completely soft for a clean, fast shave.
Both Fitch's Brush and Fitch's No Brush Shaving Cream come in big 25 and 50 cent sizes. Try a jar. You'll find it easier on your razor and easier on you.
Thank you, Jim. Now, I'd like to tell my story.
Okay, here's Dick Powell as Private Detective Richard Rogue in another personally conducted tour through Rogue's Gallery.
Confined to my little cranked-up downy couch in a hospital, but not as still as I was last week. I am now allowed to get up and totter around a little, and I use the word totter advisedly. My legs act like strangers who have different political beliefs, and my knees have suddenly developed sideway hinges. But my nurses, my nurses. Yes, they're beautiful and tender and resistant. And speaking of nurses, nurses are girls, and girls are my favorite pastime. And that brings me up to the girl who has done the most to confuse my life. Liza, the girl I was so sincerely in love with a couple of months ago. Liza was in to see me. She just left, and we were talking about the time when I showed up at her apartment for a date. It was raining out, and I was sitting at the piano, doodling around a little bit.
I don't want to go to a nightclub tonight, Richard. I'm too tired. Let's just go to a show, shall we?
Anything you say, baby. That's the kind of guy I am.
I want to see Two Girls and a Sailor. It's playing at the Rialto.
June Allison's in that, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's for me, then.
You think so?
Definitely.
You think she's prettier than I am?
Well, you're not in pictures, Angel.
Do you think she's prettier than I am?
Well, you're a different type.
Are you going to answer me?
Oh, you're jealous. How can you be jealous of a girl I don't even know? Give me a kiss.
No.
know, but baby, I love you. I love you like anything.
Jeff.
All right. Pop then. I don't care. June is busting out all over the meadow and the hill. Busts are busting out of bushes and the romping river pushes every little wheel that wheels beside a mill. June is busting out all over. The feeling is getting so intense that the young Virginia creepers have been hugging the bejeepers out of all the morning glories on the fence. Because it's June, 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 June.
You're insufferable, Richard Rogue.
Oh, now quit pouting. Come on over here, on the bench by me.
Are we going to a show or not?
Sure. Get your lipstick on again and we'll see what...
Oh.
I'll get it.
No, I'll answer. It's probably George.
Oh, George. Well, I'll tell him, that homewrecker. Hello.
Is Mr. Rogue there?
Speaking.
This is your call service, Mr. Rogue. We got a call for you.
Oh. Who is it?
Mrs. Hardy Burgess says it's very important.
Okay, put her on.
Right.
Oh, put her on. Who is it?
Hello?
Richard Rogue speaking.
This is Mrs. Harvey Burgess.
Yes?
I must see you at once, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, well, any time tomorrow, Mrs.
I'll
Burgess.
I'll see you tonight, immediately. It is most important.
Well, can't you tell me about it over the phone?
Oh, no. Could you come to my house at once?
What's the address?
485 Hillcrest. You'll be well paid for your time. Please hurry.
I'll be right out, Mrs. Burgess. Wait for me. I'll be right back, honey.
Go on. Go on out to see Mrs. Burgess. Don't mind me, Dick Tracy.
Well, what could I do? Mrs. Harvey Burgess was the wife of a tycoon with a dollar for every Democrat in Georgia. I tried to explain to Liza, but I was talking to myself and I left for the Burgess residence. I left Liza burning like Mrs. O'Leary's barn. The Burgess mansion was a huge colonial affair. George Washington could have slept there every night. He was at Valley Forge and never seen the same room twice. A butler who talked like he was choking to death on an olive pit conducted me into the library and into the presence of Mrs. Harvey Burgess. Oh, my. What a presence. She was sitting in front of the open fire, filling out a hostess gown that didn't straighten out any of the curves she featured. I pulled my eyes back into my head and tried not to look too interested.
Sit down, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, thank you. I'm in a bit of a hurry tonight, Mrs. Burgess. As a matter of fact,
Mr. Rogue, my husband is making a fool of himself.
Yes?
He's lost his mind completely over a secretary in his office. His secretary. A girl by the name of Helen Stark.
You mean that...
Yes, I mean he prefers her company to mine.
Well, it doesn't sound reasonable, if you'll pardon me for saying so. What do you want me to do?
Somebody has to bring Harvey back to his senses, Mr. Rogue.
Well, I'm afraid you've called in the wrong man. I'm not very good at long fatherly talks.
Oh, Mr. Rogue, please, I'm so lonely.
Hey, now wait a minute. Good grief. You mean to tell me that Harvey is neglecting you? What you need to straighten Harvey out is a psychiatrist, not a detective. Harvey is definitely off his trolley.
Please, help me, Mr. Rogue.
No, Mrs. Burgess.
He's with her right this minute.
How do you know?
When he left the house tonight, I followed him. He went to the home of his best friend, Clarence Roman. I parked across the street. I was going in and face them, but I saw Mr. Roman leave, and I lost my nerve. That's when I called you. Oh, Mr. Rogue, I want you to go out there and talk to Harvey. Tell him I know all about him and that Stark girl, and I'm suing him for divorce.
Well, that's not my kind of work, Mrs. Burgess. I'm sorry about that.
I don't want to divorce Harvey. But I do want him back. And I'm sure that if you will do as I say, he'll come back. You must do it for me, Mr. Rogue. Here. Oh, where is it? I have $500 here in an envelope.
You did? Wait a minute here. Is this it?
Yes. That's your fee. For going out there with me, Mr. Rogan. Trying to bring Harvey back to his senses. You'll do it for me, won't you, Mr. Rogue?
Well,
You'll do it for me, won't you, Mr. Rogue?
Okay, come along. Well, it seems there's nobody home.
There's my husband's convertible out in front, right where he left it tonight when I followed him out here.
How did the girl arrive?
In her car. Oh, her car isn't here. It was right behind Harvey's.
Looks like we got here too late, doesn't it?
Try the door. I know Harvey's still here.
All right. You're an old friend of Roman's, I suppose.
Yes. What?
I just want to know before I try to open the door. You see, there are laws against that sort of thing. Door's unlocked. Do we go in?
Yes.
Okay, after you. You know the house better than I do. Go ahead.
All right. The living room is over here.
Well, nobody home. Look, Mrs. Burgess, we better get out of here.
No. I know Harvey's in this house someplace, and I'm going to find him. I can... What are you sniffing for?
Wait a minute. That smell in the air. You get it?
What? Oh. I don't smell anything.
You don't? I smell chloroform.
Chloroform?
Now, you take a look upstairs. I'm going to shake down the first floor. That smell of chloroform can mean trouble, you know.
Mr. Rogue, what do you mean? You're frightening me.
Mrs. Burgess was very fetching when she was frightened. But I calmed her down a little bit. Now, this may sound fantastic. I've got a little bell in my head that rings an alarm every time I really get around serious trouble. And it was playing a tune that sounded too much like a death march right that minute. I had to get her out of the way. She finally went upstairs, and I went to work. I took the living room first and looked behind all the couches and in all the dark corners. I was bending over, looking under a huge Italian carved table when I thought I heard a stealthy footstep behind me.
Oh, my ears were still full of that ringing scream Mrs. Burgess had let out. I caught that sock behind the ear and drifted gently through space toward cloud number 8 and my alter ego, Hugo. I was hoping he wouldn't be there, but he was. Sitting there with that silly smirk on his face, with his little short legs pulled up under his chin, and his funny little arms around him, and his long white beard waving the cosmic breeze.
Hello, Richard. Welcome home.
No, shut up.
That's a fine attitude. You go prowling around a strange house and get caught at it and knocked out. Then you come up here and take it out on me. Get out of here, you ingrate.
Oh, stop acting like a landlord, Hugo. What happened to me?
Are you kidding?
Tell me, why did Mrs. Burgess scream? Answer me, Hugo. Do you know why she screamed?
Sure.
You ready to tell me?
No. Find out for yourself. You're a detective.
Oh, someday I'm going to get rid of you, you little pest.
Why don't you get back to work? You got a date with Liza, you know. She's still waiting.
Yeah, that's right. Well, here goes.
Come on, Rose. Please, come on.
You didn't have to hit him so hard, Clarence.
Oh, who hit me?
I'm Clarence Roman, Rogue. I came home, I found the front door unlocked, I walked in, I saw a strange man prowling around my parlor. A woman screamed, and I hit you with my cane.
Well, what do you carry for a cane? A ball bat?
Why did you scream, Mrs. Burgess?
I found my husband upstairs. He's dead, murdered.
We'll return to our story in just a moment. But now I'd like to say something to the ladies. You ever feel like hanging your head in shame because your hair isn't, well, looking as nice as it should? Perhaps you get discouraged because every time you shampoo your hair, it seems dry and difficult to set. Then for your next shampoo, why not try Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo? This clear golden liquid shampoo is made from mild coconut and vegetable oils. These pure natural oils keep your hair from becoming dry and brittle. When you use Fitch's Saponified Shampoo, you can have a shampoo as often as you like, and after each one, your hair will be soft and lustrous, easy to set into your favorite hairstyle. You'll love the glorious quantities of fragrant lather this shampoo makes. It cleanses thoroughly and then rinses out completely without a special after rinse. You see, Fitch's Saponified Shampoo contains its own patented rinsing agent. All you do is rinse with plain water, and the rinsing agent contained in the shampoo ensures the removal of all particles from your hair, making it sparkle with cleanliness. Ask for Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo at your drug counter, barber, or beauty shop. Look for the bottle with the bright yellow label. Now back to Rogue's Gallery. Richard Rogue is telling our story.
Well, I have accepted a case for Mrs. Harvey Burgess, a suspicious wife. Yes, that's the Mrs. Harvey Burgess of the Burgess Millions. She suspected her husband of having a rendezvous with Helen Stark, his secretary, at the home of Clarence Roman, Burgess's best friend, and we went out there together. Nobody answered the door, so we went in. My suspicions were aroused when I smelled the unmistakable odor of chloroform. Mrs. Burgess was looking around upstairs while I searched the downstairs. Suddenly, I heard Mrs. Burgess scream.
My husband! Upstairs, he's dead! Murdered!
Well, that snapped me out of it. I got to my feet and ran up the stairs. Mrs. Burgess and Roma were right behind me, and she directed me into the library, which was just off the main hall. And there he was, as dead as last summer's romance, with a neat little blue hole right below the part in his hair. He was a nice-looking old guy, about 50, which made him a good 25 years older than his wife. And his widow was really taking his death big, which was natural. A woman doesn't have a husband murdered every day.
Poor Harvey, this is horrible.
Has anything in this room been moved or touched?
Well, I just arrived home.
When I looked in here and saw Harvey, I knew he was dead. I screamed.
Yes, yes, I heard you. Then you ran right downstairs.
Yes, huh? I saw Mr. Roman hit you and I ran down to tell him who you were.
That's a little late. Okay. Just don't touch anything. Stay right there in the door, both of you.
Just who are you to be giving us orders?
You'll find out. Ever see this gun before?
Yes.
Where?
It was Harvey's. He kept it in his desk at the office.
Ah, you recognize it mighty quickly. How?
It has his initials on it. I can see them from here, inset in the butt of the gun.
Oh. His gun, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't suicide. Not with the gun clear over here on the opposite side of the room. This is murder. Hey, what's the matter?
Well, this ought to do it.
What is it?
It's a handkerchief. A very nice linen handkerchief with initials in the corner. And blood on it.
What initials?
H.S.
Helen Stark, that's her handkerchief. She killed Harvey. She killed my Harvey.
Is there a phone upstairs here?
Yes. You'll find an extension in the hall.
Thanks. Come on out of this room. I don't want anything touched or moved.
Oh, no. Dear, please.
You two wait for me downstairs. I'll be down just a minute. As soon as I call the police.
Homicide, Urban speaking.
Hello, Urban. Richard Rogue.
Yeah, who's dead?
Harvey Burgess, wise guy.
Huh? You mean it? You mixed up in another murder, Rogie?
Sure. You'd never find a body if it wasn't for me.
Where are you?
At the residence of Clarence Roman on Cypress Avenue, 2120. Better get the boys and get out of here.
Be right there. Got any leads on the killer?
A couple of vague ideas.
Stay there until I get there, Rook.
Liza, darling. This is Rogie.
Oh, you know what time it is?
Oh, sure, honey.
I'll give you 10 minutes to get back here and take me to that show.
What? Oh. Look, Roman. Oh, the cops will be here in a minute. Tell Urban, that's Lieutenant Urban. He'll be in charge for the police, but I'll be right back, will you? Tell him I went out to get a murderess for him.
Of course. And I hope you manage to catch your rogue.
Good evening. Is Helen Stark at home?
I beg your pardon. I'm a bit deaf. I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I said, is Helen Stark at home?
Oh, Helen, no, she isn't home this evening.
Has she been home? I say, has she been home in the last hour?
No, she hasn't. I don't know what time to expect her either, but I imagine she'll be home soon, though.
You know where she is?
Well, she didn't come home from the office tonight. She's working late.
Oh. She called you and told you she wouldn't be home?
Yes. She said she was going to work with Mr. Burgess. That's her boss, you know, the millionaire.
Yes. Well, thank you.
Could I tell her who called?
No. That won't be necessary. Thanks. Thanks very much, Mr. Stark. You and Helen live here all alone?
Yes, since her mother died several years ago. Are you an old friend of Helen's?
No, very recent acquaintance.
No.
I'm sorry I bothered you, Mr. Stark. Good night.
Good evening. Nice out after the rain, isn't it?
Yeah, sure is. Good night.
Good night.
Oh, that nice little old guy. It was going to be tough for him to realize that his daughter was a killer. I hated the world as I walked down the steps from that porch and started for my car. I don't like murder. It upsets so many people who aren't involved in the act or the reasons for it. Yeah, I guess I'm a chicken-hearted patsy. But if I am, I'm glad. Anyway, I was walking down the walk when that little bell rang in my massive intellect again. I noticed something peculiar. There were tire tracks running into the Stark garage. It had only stopped raining about 45 minutes before, and if that car had been driven into the garage while it was still raining, there would be no tracks. They would have been washed away. Now, very peculiar. I ran up the driveway and opened the overhead garage door. Then I jumped back. The garage was full of carbon monoxide. I wet my handkerchief in a puddle of rainwater, held it over my nose, and ran into the garage. I wrestled the door of the small coupe open and saw a young girl, unconscious, slumped over the steering wheel. I pulled her out of there. She was dead weight, and carried her into the house.
Oh, Helen. Helen.
I'm afraid it's a little late for that, Mr. Stark. Where's your telephone?
In the hall. Right in the hall.
Thanks. I got a pull motor squad out here right away.
Fire department.
Get a pull motor squad to 640 Inglewood Drive. Attempted suicide. Bad shape. Russian.
Right.
Raymond, Ramsey, Bing, Roman. Roman, Clarence.
Hello?
Lieutenant Urban, please. This is Richard Rogue, and it's important.
This is Urban speaking, Rogue. I thought I told you to stay here.
Look, never mind the arguments. Get out here to 640 Inglewood Drive. I've got Helen Stark for you.
You have? Nice work. I want to talk to that young lady.
Well, you missed the boat. I think she's dead. Suicide. Carbon monoxide poisoning. Step on it.
Okay, Rogue. I'll be there in 10 minutes. Don't go away.
I gave Helen Stark my own interpretation of artificial respiration until the pull motor squad got there. Irvin arrived on the heels of the fire department, and we went out and looked around in the garage. Made some fascinating discoveries, too. The car had run out of gas and stopped turning over, for one thing. And one thing led to another, to coin a phrase. Anyway, Irvin and I made a little deal. I went back to the Roman residence, and while he and his boys were being scientific, I sat in the parlor and talked with Mrs. Burgess and Clarence Roman. Mrs. Burgess had recovered her poise to some extent. They were both very anxious to know all about my daring capture of the Stark girl.
I'm glad she's dead. I couldn't stand a trial. I'm glad she committed suicide.
Yes, I just seemed like the only way out. She wasn't very smart about murder, leaving clues all over the place the way she did. You and the cops would have had her in 24 hours. How well did you know the Stark girl, Roman?
Rather well. I'd see her around the office a great deal. Harvey was, well, not very discreet about the fact that he was fond of her.
Please, Clemens. Harvey's dead. We should forget those things. He was a good husband. I don't know what life's going to be like without him.
I just have an idea that it's going to be pretty simple, Mrs. Burgess. And possibly rather short.
What do you mean?
I mean that the police suspected you and Mr. Roman murdered your husband and Miss Stark.
That's a serious action, Rogue.
Your husband was suing you for divorce, wasn't he, Mrs. Burgess? He knew you were going to be there with Mr. Roman, his best friend, tonight. So he came and surprised you with Helen Stark for a witness, didn't he? And you, Mr. Roman, you killed him, and then you had to kill Helen Stark to shut her up.
This is preposterous.
Ah, sit down, Roman.
You were right, Rogie. We found Roman's fingerprints on the steering wheel of Helen Stark's car. One of the boys just got back with a report that Roman's shoe is a perfect fit in that shoe print outside Stark's garage.
I had nothing to do with it. Clarence Harvey, and then he chloroformed that Stark girl, and then...
You're in this as far as I am. Shut up.
I've got more news for you, Roman. Helen Stark isn't dead. The car ran out of gas just in time. She'll be there to appear against you when you're tried for murder.
I don't want to talk to you, Richard Rogue. I'm busy.
Oh, now, honey.
The lady says she's busy.
Yeah? Who are you?
His name is George, the night chump.
Ah, little drops of rain. The stuff we're getting so much of out here in California right now saved Helen Stark's life. Because if I hadn't noticed those tire tracks, she'd have stayed in the garage until it was too late for the pull motor squad to save her. Yes, sir. Little drops of rain put the curse on what was almost a perfect double murder. With the help of my massive intellect. There's only one thing I can't understand. How come a guy as smart as I am gets hit on the head so often? Answer me that, will you? This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. How did you like our little story tonight? Ray Buffum wrote it, Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Dee Engelbach produced and directed. Oh, don't forget to tune in next Thursday night. We're going to present a strange story of a house where everybody was scared. We call it the House of Fear. So make a date with us, will you? Thanks for listening, and good night, all. Now, here's Jim Doyle.
Don't forget to tune in again next Thursday, same time, same station, when you will again hear Dick Powell as Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. Remember, if dandruff is your problem, ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Removes dandruff the first time it is used. Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo is the only shampoo whose guarantee to remove dandruff is backed by one of the world's largest insurance companies. This statement can be made by no other shampoo. Ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo at your drug counter, barber, or beauty shop. Fitch is spelled F-I-T-C-H.
Folks, when we see a wounded veteran, we can thank him with our eyes and with a smile. We can also thank him in more material ways, like helping make sure he gets all the benefits of the GI Bill of Rights. That takes money, the money we lend when we buy victory bonds. Buy victory bonds.
Truth is stranger than fiction. This is the truth. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
David Lamont, minister of Kirkpatrick, Durham, Scotland for 63 years, married the girl who was the first infant he ever baptized. She was 21 when they were married, and they lived happily together for 38 years. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about another unusual love story. John Dixon, a carpenter and joiner of Newberry, South Carolina, was so desperately in love with a young woman that when she turned down his proposal of marriage, he decided to end it all. He made an attempt to commit suicide by hanging. The opportune arrival of a neighbor who severed the rope in the nick of time saved his life. Dixon recovered, but he wrote a novel chapter in the history of happy endings. He found a new love and a willing mate in the person of the girl's mother, believe it or not.
Listen while the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
Good evening. This is your Rexall family druggist with a welcome from the 10,000 independent druggists who have made the word Rexall part of our own store names. We've done that because we recommend and sell the 2,000 or more drug products made by the Rexall Drug Company. Like Vismarex, for example. This famous Rexall antacid often neutralizes excess acidity within 1 minute. What's more, the ingredients in Vismarex vary in the time it takes them to dissolve in the stomach. And that way, relief from acid indigestion is quick, continuous, and prolonged. Quality like that of Bismarex is what we family druggists are talking about when we tell you you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. Now your Rexall family druggist brings you another exciting half hour with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell.
Well, are you Mr. Diamond?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Come right in.
My name is Wolf.
Well, unofficially, so is mine. Sit down.
Thank you.
Oh, no, my pleasure. You must get a dividend from the nylon companies. It'd be terrible if there was a shortage.
I'm well stocked.
Yeah. What can I do for you?
Start by calling me Edna.
Well, then what?
I'd like you to follow my husband.
As a detective or a replacement?
I think he's been seeing another woman.
Why? Have you been running around the house in a diving suit and swim fins?
I've always tried to keep myself attractive for my husband, Mr. Diamond.
Well, then if your husband is seeing another woman, Mrs. Wolf, it's got to be an optometrist assistant.
Well, thank you. I think you and I are going to get along just fine.
Well, now that we're all agreed, tell me some more about your husband. What makes you think there's another woman?
Usual things. The way he's been acting. Business appointments every evening.
Nothing else?
He received a call late this afternoon. I listened in on the extension. It was a woman.
She called the house?
George was very unhappy about it, warned her never to do it again.
She gave a name?
She said, "This is Nancy. I must see you here tonight at 8 o'clock.
Hmm. She didn't say where here was, did she?
No, George seemed to understand. Probably her apartment.
Probably.
If he's seeing another woman, I want a divorce, Mr. Diamond.
And you need grounds.
Yes.
$100 a day in expenses, Mrs. Wolfe.
Edna.
It's still $100 a day in expenses.
Here's $200.
Hmm.
I hope that's enough of a retainer.
Oh, that'll keep me interested for quite a while. Now, tell me, what does your husband do? I mean his business.
He's in steel.
How much in?
Very much. He's vice president of his company.
What does he look like?
Here's a picture of him.
Hmm. Well, I'll start right away and see what I can find out for you, Mrs.
Edna.
Yeah. Well, look, after I found out just how unfair your husband's treating you, I might lend you my shoulder to cry on. And I'd just about have to call you Edna then, wouldn't I? By 7 o'clock, I was standing across the street from her house waiting for her wandering husband. By 7:30, a man stepped out on the sidewalk and hailed a cab. I recognized him from the photograph as George Wolfe, and I started the tale, following him east across town to an apartment house on 47th Street. By the time I got in the lobby, it was deserted. A list of names on the mailboxes showed the only girl named Nancy in the building was a Nancy Fowler. So I headed for her apartment. Her door was at the far end of the hall, and I was halfway to it when George Wolfe bounded out and ran right into me.
Let me go. Take your hands off of me.
You forgot to close the door.
Get out of my way.
What's the matter, friend? You look like you ran into a yard full of snakes.
Will you get out of my way, or must I use force?
Well, use all you like, but I think you better go back and close the door.
No, no.
Yes, yes.
Stop it. You can't do this to me.
Well, I hope you aren't always this wrong.
No, no. Please.
Now get in the room. Oh, swell. No wonder you took off like that.
I didn't kill her. I swear I didn't kill her.
Nancy Fowler?
Yes, I guess so.
You guess so?
Well, this is Miss Fowler's apartment, but I've never seen Nancy Fowler before in my life.
There was a .38 revolver lying next to the dead girl, so I took out my own gun and covered Wolfe while I called Lieutenant Levinson of Homicide to get right over. Wolfe yelled, screamed, and pleaded, and even offered me a nice fat bribe. But we waited for Fatty Levinson and his squad of New York's finest. He finally arrived, but New York's finest was poorly represented.
Hello, Shamus. In trouble again, huh?
Walt, did you have to bring Otis?
I promised he hasn't used the siren in 4 days. Who's this guy?
George Wolfe. Caught him running out of the door.
Well, Mr. Wolfe, what about it?
I had nothing to do with it, but I'm not saying any more until I see my lawyer.
He was crying all over the place before you got here, Walt. Claimed he got a call from a Nancy Fowler who asked him to come up here.
That's the truth, Lieutenant. She said she had something important to tell me.
Says he never even heard of Nancy Fowler before the call.
That also is the truth. When I came to the apartment, I found her lying just as you see her.
How'd you get in the door?
She told me she'd leave it open for me to walk right in.
Bullet came out the back, just below the shoulder blades, Lieutenant.
You on the gun, Mr. Wolfe?
I refuse to answer any more questions.
Okay, take him down to the car, Otis.
Come on, you.
Rick, just how did you happen to be in this building at this particular time?
Well, I was hired by that guy's wife, the tail M. He was supposed to be playing illegal footsies with a female named Nancy.
The dead girl?
Well, the wife just knew the first name was Nancy. The girl who's supposed to live here is named Nancy. Nancy Fowler. I've never seen her before. Maybe the dead girl is one and the same.
Well, I'll get an identification and have the gun checked by ballistics. In the meantime, I'm going to give this apartment a good going over.
Mind if I help?
Now, what kind of an answer do you expect to that? You will anyway.
He was so right. We started going over the apartment room by room, closets, drawers, everything. In 10 minutes, the coroner and the boys from the lab arrived, and in the bedroom, Walt found something.
Take a look at this.
Ah, jewelry box. Hey.
Pretty expensive.
Regal Jewelers. Very classy establishment. Has a card in the box.
For my darling love, George. And the guy said he never saw her before. If this is his handwriting, he's as good as strapped in the chair.
Well, it looked as if my client, Mrs. Wolfe, had a killer for a husband. But a couple of small items still worried me. So I left Walt and went downstairs to find the switchboard operator.
Oh, are you with the police?
I just left them. Tell me, dear, do you keep a list of the calls that are made through the switchboard?
Sure, it costs the tenants 10 cents a call.
May I see the list?
Yeah, I guess so. Here, handsome.
Gee, nobody's called me that since I had long blonde curls and a gold yo-yo. I looked over the list of telephone calls and found the ones made by Nancy Fowler during the past 3 or 4 days. The last call listed from her apartment had been made at 7:45 that evening to a familiar telephone number. The same number Mrs. Wolf had given me when she left my office earlier. I left for the home of Mrs. Edna Wolf.
Yes. Oh, Mr. Diamond, you shouldn't come here. What if my husband...
Your husband's spending the night out.
What?
In a cell, all alone.
Oh, you'd better come in. Now, what in the world are you talking about?
Well, it looks as if your husband killed a girl this evening.
Oh, no.
That's the way it looks.
Oh, please, sit down, Mr. Diamond.
Thanks. I caught him running out of the girl's apartment, forced him back, and found the girl shot to death on the floor.
Nancy Fowler?
Yes, I think so. It was her apartment. The police are making identification now.
Oh, it's just terrible. I wonder why he did it.
Were you here in the house at 7:30 this evening?
Well, no, I was with a friend until about 8:30.
Well, a call was made to your house from Nancy Fowler's apartment. She was charged for it, so the call was completed.
But she probably talked to George.
Your husband swears he didn't know the girl. Claims he got a phone call, and she asked him to come right over, that she had something to tell him.
He knew her all right. You remember, I told you I overheard them talking.
Your husband own a gun?
Well, yes, I believe so.
You know what caliber?
No. I don't know anything about guns.
A bracelet was found in the dead girl's apartment. The card with it was signed Love, George.
Oh, it looks pretty bad, doesn't it?
If it's his handwriting, it does.
Well, I guess he deserves it, but I'll call our lawyer and see what can be done.
I'll keep in touch, Mrs. Wolf.
I hope you will. Just because the case is finished.
Well, there are still a few things that bother me, so I'll just kind of keep looking around until I'm satisfied.
You mean you think maybe my husband didn't kill the girl?
There's an awful lot of evidence that he did, but there's still a motive to be found. You've got the grounds you wanted, so from here on in, anything I do for you or your husband will be on my own time.
Anything you do for my husband, I'll be glad to pay for.
Oh, well, now, that's real nice. Well, I'll take a run down to the precinct and let you know what the lieutenant has found out. Good night, Mrs. Wolf.
Still can't get used to Edna?
It'll take a while.
But you'd be in bed by now, Rick.
My landlord short-cheated me. What did you find out, Walt?
The dead girl was Nancy Fowler.
Figured.
And George Wolf did do the killing.
His gun?
Yeah, we checked the registration. His gun, his fingerprints on it, his handwriting on the note in the jewelry case.
What does he say about the bracelet and the note?
He bought it all right. We checked. Regal Jewelers. Says it was for his wife. You expect him to say something different?
No. What's the motive?
We'll find it. Probably another man.
Here's the report on the dead girl, Lieutenant.
Well, isn't it a little late for you, Otis? Why aren't you out flying around some belfry?
He's picking on me again, Lieutenant.
Maybe you'd like me to tell him about the time I caught you sleeping in the attic hanging by your toe.
Oh, not you too, Lieutenant.
Otis, I hear you've been picking up some extra money posing for Charles Adams.
I don't have to take this. I know my rights, and I ain't no bat.
Here's something on the dead girl. She works at the Gilded Cage, a nightclub owned by Eddie Young.
Eddie Young. Well, there's a nice little fella. He'd set fire to his grandmother if he thought it was too cold in the room.
We'll have a talk with him tomorrow.
Well, I guess I better be going.
Sure. See you later.
Yeah, I could sure use some sleep.
Yeah. And, Rick, when you get over to Eddie Young's club, give him my best.
Smarty. The Gilded Cage, where Eddie Young ruled as proprietor and keeper for his flock of hired gorillas, was only about 6 blocks away, so I decided to walk it. But like always, I start in one direction and end up getting sidetracked.
Keep walking, Diamond. Don't turn around.
You caught me when I'm right in the mood.
You turn around, I shoot you.
What's the matter? Don't you want me to spot your Tony?
Over to that car.
Okay. Quit poking. Your muzzle's cold.
You drive. I'll get in the back.
Oh, I forgot my glasses. Can't see 3 feet without them.
Get in.
But I have a restricted driver's license.
You want it right here?
I can wait. Where to?
Just start driving and don't turn around.
We headed east across town with a gun pointed at my neck. I tried to get a look at the guy in the rear vision mirror, but he was sitting too far to one side. I didn't know where we were headed, but I had a pretty good hunch why we were going there.
Turn right. And take it a little slower. I don't want to have to shoot a cop.
Well, if we're headed for the river, I've seen it.
From the bottom?
Don't you think we'd better stop at a bathhouse or something?
I know a spot where you can go in clothes and all.
Okay. But if there's anything I hate, it's getting my money wet.
Turn right again.
We were headed for a cross street. I could only turn right or left. A big warehouse was dead ahead. I eased down on the gas, and we picked up speed as we neared the intersection. As I started to make the turn, I stamped down on the gas hard, and at the same time threw myself toward the floorboard. His gun went off so close to my ear, I felt like my head had split wide open. Then we hit the building.
You're listening to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, brought to you by the makers of Rexall Drug Products and your Rexall family druggist. And here he is.
Last week, a customer said to me,
I wish I knew some way to be sure I'm getting enough vitamins. Some way that's easy. Yes, and inexpensive, too.
Well, ma'am, millions of people have found the easy way to do that. They take Rexall Plenamins.
Plenamins?
Rexall's popular multivitamin capsules. Just two plenamins a day give you more than your minimum daily requirement of every vitamin for which such requirements have been established.
Well, you can't expect much more than that.
Yet plenamins do give you more than that, for they also contain valuable liver concentrate and iron, plus other factors of the vitamin B complex.
Say, they sound expensive.
On the contrary, Rexall plenamins cost you only a few pennies per day. Ask for plenamins at Rexall drugstores everywhere, and remember, you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
And now back to tonight's adventure with Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
We had hit the building and pushed our way halfway through the brick wall. I was still on the floor, and the motor had been shoved through the firewall and was jammed into the front seat where I had been sitting a minute before. My friend with a gun was stretched out over the top of the seat, his legs resting on the horn and his shoulders through the windshield. I sat up, rolled him off the horn. He was very dead. Before a crowd could collect, I climbed out and got to a phone, called Walt.
Are you sure you're all right, Rick?
Yeah, I can hear things better now.
I just said the other guy's dead.
Very, I recognized him, too. Gus Winkler.
Holy cow. You know who he's working for now?
No.
Eddie Young.
Oh, that's it. Well, don't pick Young up, Walt. I know a few things I haven't told you about, and this almost puts a cinch on it. I want to talk to Young, and then I'll be down to see you.
But if Young tried to have you killed...
Oh, if he did, you can't prove it. Not yet, anyway. So sit tight, and when I get there, I'll show you how to catch a killer.
You going someplace, chump?
Yeah, right through that door, chump.
That's Mr. Young's office. Maybe he don't want to see you.
Maybe he don't, but he's going to be disappointed.
You ain't going in there, chump.
I see. Everybody gets disappointed sooner or later, chump.
Yeah, what? Aren't you in the wrong room?
That's what your boy outside thought. I changed his mind.
Are you sure you ain't looking for Bellevue, Shellness? You're kind of a mess.
One of your boys, Gus Winkler, tried to give me swimming lessons. You can claim his body at the morgue.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Somebody else who works for you got killed tonight, too.
Yeah, who?
Nancy Fowler.
What?
Oh, come on, Eddie. I couldn't stand it if you started crying.
Who killed her?
The police are holding a man named George Wolf. Know him?
No, I don't know him, but Nancy's talked about him a couple of times.
Hey, boss, that guy just...
Forget it, Lou.
Well, but boss, he...
Forget it, will you? Go on, beat it.
Okay.
You know, Shamus Lou's a pretty big boy for you to go pushing around. He's liable to stay mad.
So Nancy said she knew this George Wolf.
That's right. Ritual guy, from the way she talked, she was taking him good.
Where were you between 7 and 8 this evening?
Right here in this office. I got witnesses.
Oh, I'll bet you have. Okay, Eddie, I'll see you around. I left the office knowing how close I was to the whole answer and called Walt at the precinct. I told him to meet me up the block from the gilded cage, and 10 minutes later, he pulled the squad car up to the curb, and I climbed in.
You find out anything?
Yeah, but I have to know one thing first. What time was Nancy Fowler killed?
Coroner's report puts it at 7:30.
Well, that ties it.
Now, would you mind telling me what it's all about?
I'll do better than that, Walt. I'll show you. But we've got to wait until Eddie Young leaves the cafe and goes home. It was around 12:30, and we settled back to wait. And with an impatient cop sitting next to me, it wasn't easy. Around 1 in the morning, a boy brought Eddie Young's convertible up in front. We watched Eddie climb in. Okay, Walt, tail him. We stayed close, following Eddie Young across town until he pulled up in front of his apartment and turned into the basement garage. Give me 5 minutes, Walt. Then come on up to Young's apartment.
Why can't I go now?
Because what I'm about to do isn't quite legal, and I couldn't stand seeing you blush. Hold it, Eddie.
Hey, what's going on?
One yell and I'll kill you.
Look, Diamond. Come on, put away that gun, will you? What do you want?
Let's go up to your apartment. But please believe me, Eddie. I'll do something bad if you get out of line. We rode the elevator up to Eddie's 8th floor apartment. I shoved him in the door ahead of me and then made sure there was no one else around to give me any trouble.
All right. What do you want?
Pick up that phone.
Okay, but take it easy with that, will you? Well, who do you want me to call?
This number and hurry. I'll tell you what to say.
Okay, owner. I don't get this. Evergreen, 3.
What's the matter? Don't you like that number, Eddie?
I don't even know the number.
Well, then dial it quick.
Okay.
And when you get an answer, just say, this is Eddie. Get right over here. I got to see you.
And I'll look, Shamus.
You look, Eddie. I'm going to hold this barrel right between your eyes so you can see it coming if you make a mistake.
I won't make a mistake. Hello? This is Eddie. Yeah, get right over here. I gotta see you. I can't talk. Goodbye. Okay, now, will you take that gun away?
You look a little worried.
What have I got to be worried about? I don't know who I was talking to. Oh.
That should be the law, Eddie.
What is this, Diamond?
I'm sorry I can't show you right now. Good night, Eddie.
Wait a minute, you...
Come on in, Walt.
You said 5 minutes... Holy smoke, what happened to him?
I just put him to sleep. He'll stay that way for a while.
Now, Rick, you've got to tell me what's going on.
I told you I'd show you. Now, go on in the kitchen and see if you can find some ketchup.
Ketchup?
Yeah, and then bring it out here and pour it all over Young.
Have you lost your mind?
Walt, I want him to make him look like he's bleeding. Now, go find the ketchup or I'll just have to cut his throat. Walt found the ketchup and under protest poured it over the unconscious Eddie Young. Then I made sure the door was unlocked, and we went out in the hall to wait.
Please, Rick, what is this?
It's the same way Nancy Fowler killing was framed, only she was really killed. Shh, shh, quiet, elevator.
Okay, I'll play along with it.
Let's go, Walt. All right, hold it, Miss Wolf.
Oh, Mr. Diamond, he's dead. His head is all covered with blood.
Why did you kill him?
Kill him? I didn't kill him. I just got here.
Who let you in?
He told me the door would be open.
I didn't know you knew Eddie Young.
Well, yes, I know him. He's an old friend.
What?
This is Lieutenant Levinson, Mrs. Wolf. He's the man who arrested your husband for the murder of Nancy Fowler.
Lieutenant, I swear I didn't kill Eddie.
Looks bad, Mrs. Wolf.
I didn't. Why would I want to kill Eddie?
Well, why would your husband want to kill Nancy Fowler?
I don't know. What has that got to do with this?
You told me you didn't know Nancy Fowler.
I didn't.
You knew Eddie. Nancy worked for Eddie.
Well, I didn't know it. I didn't know Eddie that well.
You said a girl called your husband and said her name was Nancy.
Yes, that's right.
You told me you didn't know her last name, and yet when I came over and told you your husband had just killed a girl, you asked me if it was Nancy Fowler.
That's a lie.
You said that Nancy phoned your husband that afternoon.
She did. I swear she did.
And yet Nancy Fowler's hotel switchboard has no record of a call being made to your phone any time in the afternoon.
They made a mistake.
But at 7:45, a call was made from Nancy's apartment to your phone number.
Then she must have called my husband again.
According to the coroner's report, Nancy Fowler was dead at 7:30.
Oh,
Mrs. Wolf, I can swear your husband didn't go into that building until 8 o'clock. I was following him.
Oh. Yes, it doesn't make any difference what Eddie did.
Did Eddie kill the girl?
Yes. I called my husband. I wanted to get a divorce.
And his money at the same time.
Eddie knew Nancy, so we decided she'd be the one. She let Eddie in. He made her call my husband. Then he shot her.
And the gun and the bracelet. You just took them out of your husband's dresser drawer and planted them in Nancy's apartment?
Yes. I found the bracelet in the drawer with the gun. I guess my husband was going to surprise me. Eddie. Eddie is moving. Oh, Eddie. Eddie, darling.
Hey, what happened?
You're hurt. You're bleeding.
Bleeding?
Stay still until we can call it.
Wait a minute, will you? Hey, what is this stuff? This isn't blood. I'm covered with ketchup.
Ketchup? Ketchup? Why, you dirty no good! Eddie! We've been framed!
Framed?
They're all yours, Walt.
Why?
Good night, Mrs. Oh, I guess now is as good a time as any. Good night, Edna.
Yes?
Helen? It's Rick, honey.
Oh, isn't that sweet? I was just dreaming. Rick, it's 4 a.m. Where are you?
Well, I'm helping Walt close up the Gilded Cage.
Helping Walt close up the what?
The Gilded Cage. Nightclub.
I hear music.
Bud and his accordion will love you.
Are you drinking?
Honey, I'm with the police force.
What was that?
Well, that was Walt. He said, Rick...
You stood me up this evening.
Well, I'm going to make up for it, honey. Listen. Okay, 1, 2.
You made me love you. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. You made me want you. And all the time you knew it. I guess you always knew it. You made me happy sometimes. You made me glad. But there were times, dear, you made me feel so bad. You made me sigh, for I didn't want to tell you.
I didn't want to tell you.
I want some love that's true. Gimme what I cry for. You know you got the kind of kisses that I'd die for. You know you made me love you.
Abe? That's enough, Abe. How was that, honey? 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 Oh, well.
She liked it.
Well, of course she did. She'll be dreaming about it for the rest of the night. Come on, Walt. Let's dance.
Once more, here's your Rexall family druggist.
No faster-acting aspirin made. That's Rexall aspirin. When taken with water, the 5 full grains of pure aspirin contained in every Rexall tablet are ready to go to work for you even before they reach your stomach. Next time you need aspirin, remember Rexall aspirin. There's no faster-acting aspirin made. Ask for it at Rexall drugstores everywhere, and remember... You can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, stars Dick Powell in the title role and is written by Blake Edwards with music composed and conducted by Frank Worth. Featured in tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Ted DeCorsia, Wilms Herbert, Hi Aberback, Stacey Harris, and Victor Perrin. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. This is Bill Forman inviting you to be with us next Wednesday at this time when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Hiya, beautiful.
Get lost, Bristlepuss. You need a shave.
But I have shaved. What else do you want me to do?
Silly boy, she wants you to go stag.
Go stag? But why?
Because Stag is Rexall's exclusive line of men's good grooming aids, like Stag Brushless Shave Cream. No fuss, no massage, just smooth it on and presto, you get a clean, close shave. Your face stays smooth and whiskerless all day long.
I'll go stag.
That's it. Join the Stag line now at Rexall drugstores everywhere.
Yes, to make girls care. Go stag.
Sarah Berner will delight you tomorrow with Sarah's Private Caper on NBC.
That's case closed for this week. If you need more old-time radio, you can go to relicradio.com. Find all types of varieties of old-time radio, including thrillers, suspense, strange tales, comedies, everything you want. It's at relicradio.com. You can find this website for this show at relicradio.com/caseclosed. We've got some of the past episodes still available there. You can email me at relicradio@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with a new episode of Case Closed.